So I had to create my own competitive advantage differentiation concept, and it's called the only statement. And it goes like this. We're going to compete and win by being the only ones who, dot, dot, dot. So the strategy process defines how big you want to be, where you're going to get the money, and how are you going to compete by being the only one that does what you do. So the whole growth plan starts out with that as a basis. And in terms of time allocation, you know, that's like 20% of the task. 80% of it is now, what are we going to do with that to breathe life into that puppy?
Welcome to 7 to 8, our special series on 7 to 8 figure entrepreneurs. In this special series, I interview $1 million, some $10 million, and even some $1 million business owners who uncover their twists and turns in their entrepreneurial adventure in order to help you to avoid the potholes and stick to the fast track. Welcome now to Center Stage, our next special guest. Hey there, peeps. This is Michelle Nedelec, and I'm super glad that you're here with us today because I'm here with my most amazing guest, Roy. Roy, thank you so much for being here with us today.
Very welcome. My pleasure.
Awesome. So give us a highlight of who you are and what you do for business.
So my name is Roy Osing. I'm a Norwegian. We, in our ancestry days, broke away from tradition. And yes, we did pillage the odd village here and there. And I only say that because deep down, it sort of drove an energy level in me for my whole career that I think made a big difference. Because it's not what you know that makes you successful, it's what you do with what you know that makes you successful. And so I was asked at one point to actually take a telecom business into the internet world. And we did that and grew it to $1 billion in annual sales. And so I guess my life was all about doing that. Figuring out practical, proven, simple ways that lit fires in people and captured their hearts to actually execute on a strategy that had phenomenal growth. And at a time when, if you think about it, the telecom business was a traditional business. And to actually pull it into the internet space was kind of my challenge. And it was a really, that's when I learned pain is a strategic concept. Because it was very, very painful changing cultures, et cetera. So I'm the kind of breakaway guy. I don't believe in traditions yesterday because typically they'd lead you in the wrong direction tomorrow. So I like trying new things, practical, love people. Let's do this. Let's get some results and let's grow the business.
I love it. So, and today, who are you working with and what kind of results are you creating for them?
So I'm working for myself. Okay, mm-hmm. So basically what I'm trying to do is pay it forward. And so I work with people who need, obviously, growth as their friend. And I try and help them by using the things that work for me, beginning with my own planning process, right through all of the elements that I've found are extraordinary in terms of growth contribution. And we have a lot of fun doing it. So I'm my own boss. I don't need to work. I want to work. I want to help people. I want to help them break away, right, from the inertia, okay, of approaches that are founded in textbook thinking. I want to get them out of that because you know what? It's liberating. It's free to break loose of a textbook. And I keep saying, put it down. And so that's what I'm doing. And I'm helping them.
I love it. So let's get into more of the tactics of what are working for you. Because I think when you say there's a textbook on it, it's usually the drab, boring university text of, oh, this is what Google did, and this is how they made their billions. It's like, yeah, right. They were in a garage doing the same thing we're doing, and that's how they built their business. But they did have a different approach to things, and I think that's kind of the nugget that you're taking out of there, which they don't expand on. And it's being able to figure out what that little nugget is that made them unique that we all have the ability to be able to create, whether or not we have the daddy's backing and all that kind of fun jazz.
Yeah, well, look, it all starts with getting the right plan in place. Now, I'm not sort of like the typical planning dude. I had to create my own planning process, okay, because the regular planning process wouldn't work. It took too long and it was way too expensive. It was too focused on getting the essence of the strategy pristine. And I'm not that kind of a guy, right? In the meantime, you're spending months and months and months trying to make the plan perfect, which you'll never do anyways. And you're not doing stuff in a marketplace. So I created what I call a strategic game plan built to execute. So the model for me was, I need a way to plan in a way that gets me to execution really fast, because I'm a guy that believes that speed is a competitive advantage. Imperfection is a competitive advantage. Speed and imperfection are double whammies, right? They are really, really good. So I created this simple strategy process. It goes like this. Answer three questions and you have your strategy. First question, how big do you want to be? That's a question about your growth goals. And my process is different because it starts out with the numbers, right? Michelle, it doesn't end up with the numbers. Because typically most planning processes, you develop the strategy, then you develop the economic consequences. Then you look at the numbers and you go, oh my God, the numbers aren't good enough. We got to change the assumptions. No, you can't do that, right? So you start off with the numbers, and the numbers actually develop and describe the character of the strategy and the risk profile of the strategy. So how big do you want to be? That's revenue, top line revenue, nothing else. It's not EBITDA, it's not net income, it's top line. That's a market expression. So if you're at 5 million, I say in 24 months, what do you want to do? Where do you want to be? You want to be at 10 million? It will make a difference, because if you picked 6 million, it's an incremental strategy required to do that, and it delivers different sorts of approaches. If you want to double revenues, okay, that's a big step up. We got to be a little more bold and audacious in the way we create that strategy. So that's the first question. Second question is easy. Where do you get it from? Who do you want to serve? So now you've said you're going to get 5 million. My next question is, well, where are we going to get it? This is not a mass market game. This is a target marketing game. What customer groups have the latent potential to get you the how big? Okay. And so we go through that. Be really pristine in terms of definition. And the third question is, how are you going to compete and win? How are you going to beat the bad guys? Okay. Now, this is not a matter of saying, well, we're going to be better at customer service. We're going to be the best marketing engine. We're going to be the number one market leaders, because I call all those words claptrap, because they don't mean anything. So I had to create my own competitive advantage differentiation concept, and it's called the only statement. And it goes like this. We're going to compete and win by being the only ones who dot, dot, dot. So the strategy process defines how big you want to be, where are you going to get the money, and how are you going to compete by being the only one that does what you do? So the whole growth plan starts out with that as a basis. And in terms of time allocation, you know, that's like 20% of the task. 80% of it is now, what are we going to do with that to breathe life into that puppy? So in my world, you spend 20% on getting the plan just about right. We're going to head west. We don't know where they're going to end up in Calgary or Vancouver until we actually start executing, right? And moving and shaking with the way the environment changes. And then we're just going to go for it, right? Learn as you run. I call it planning on the run. Sorry, guys, this isn't pristine. This is trench stuff thinking. And why do I believe in it? Because it got me a billion in sales. That's why. So that's what I do. That, you know, we start off with that. And then there's all sorts of other elements we can talk about that are actually what I call execution elements around my strategic game plan. Just a way to breathe life into that execution doctrine.
Nice. I am all about execution, and you got me. However, I want to make sure that everybody's kind of starting at the right, with the right mindset, because oftentimes I hear people, again, going back to the Google thing, it's they're looking at a $1 billion business going, okay, well, I can apply this to my $5 million business. Like, no, you can't. You're not there yet. You got to get some fundamentals in place first. And likewise, somebody that's making 100 grand that wants to make $1 million is not going to be doing that. So are there levels that you see in the first section of how big do you want to get? Are we looking at, like, a tech company can usually go, yeah, I want to make $100 million and I want to sell. They can do that because of the nature of the business. But sometimes if you get like Frank's Plumbing, it's not going to have the kind of the same impact and growth abilities. So are there anything that you've noticed in kind of that first stage of big as to kind of how people can differentiate themselves, or is it all one for you?
It's all one for me, because I'll tell you what happens is, if you pick a modest growth goal, then you have no drive to be creative and innovative. The reality is, my experience is how big and the way you deal with how big actually drives the extent to which you must innovate in your business in order to make it. Now, look, if I'm at a million and I want five and I only get four, have I failed? I mean, the reality is if I apply standard pedantic planning, I probably would have got a million and a half anyways.
Right.
Right. So this is all about how bold do you want to be, because the boldness drives what you have to do differently. Okay. And look at, I take a plumbing business. I don't care what kind of business it is. The issue is, do you want to make, you know, step up kinds of growth improvements, or you want to just continue on to be kind of an incremental person? It all the same, right? The engines of growth are different. All that means is how big is going to be way different. That's all.
Right.
But the essence, the driver behind it that says how big and audaciousness is a driver of creativity, that transcends any business, a not-for-profit, whatever, small business, large business. That notion for me has been extremely helpful. Okay, not knowing how to get there drives you to be innovative. Knowing how to get there is really insipid, you know, and it's a walk in a park. And don't take credit for that. If the market's growing at 75% and you grow at 50, don't take credit for the 50. You should have got 150. Okay, so that's kind of where I come from. And just kick their butts, get them thinking right. But the problem is, Michelle, we've been taught, people have been taught, okay, to operate within these limits. Okay, mm-hmm. Within, do the case studies and figure out what the case studies done. It's got, case studies got to be right. Look at what Google did. They got to be right. Look at Blue Oceans. My God, that's a brilliant strategy, right? As a leader, it was worthless to me because it didn't teach me anything in terms of how to do something. It taught me academically the notion that I need to find a blue ocean, but the chances of doing that are probably zero. I'm going to find myself in red oceans for my whole life, and I got to find a way to compete in those red oceans. I'm your red ocean guy, because what I did is I helped a business compete where there's tons of competition, right? And we didn't have the luxury of a blue ocean. And the reality is the only ones that really like that idea are other academics. That's it. I'm sorry. I just took off on that one. I know.
I love a little poke of the beast. And I quite agree with you. It's a lot of this. That kind of information that goes out there and it goes viral and people are like, oh, I scratch things and slice bread. And it's like, and I can't apply it. Like, I don't know what that means. I am with you.
You know, as a leader, like this is what drove me to look for simple things.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Because if you can't execute on a concept, I don't want to talk about it because it's costing me time and money, right? I need to find nuggets. Okay, blue pills that will actually ignite fire in the frontline people around a journey. I want to get them on the journey with me. I want to help them to continue on that journey and give them whatever they need to fight and win. And that's never concepts. It's never concepts. It's warm blankets, right? It's recognition. It's reward. It's capturing their hearts. And you can do that, but you don't do that with a textbook. Regardless of whether or not you think you can create an algorithm around human behavior. I'll just leave it there.
Yeah. Talk to me about execution and how you bring that to fruition.
So execution comes in many forms. And it's there's no silver bullet on this, by the way. Just to preface this whole thing, we're talking about establishing a growth culture. We're not talking about a number of growth tactics that you can employ. The reality is if you're tactically driven, I worry about your future, okay? So what you really have to do is create context for the tactics. And that's a cultural thing. So to the point you made earlier, which is dead on, this, you got to be in this for the long term. You want to scale your business? It's not about what you're going to do to cost in the next 30 days, okay? It's what you're going to do to grow revenue in the long term and cost at a disproportionately lower rate. That's what scaling is. So it's a cultural change. So here are the sorts of crazy elements that I actually created. I call these my audacious ways, right? Audacious way. First, audacious ways, what I call line of sight leadership. I mean, one of the problems with execution is people don't know what to do, right? Like nobody explains to them, we've now got a new strategy, right? And you need to do some different things. in order for us to execute on the strategy. Nobody goes down to sales and tells them specifically, or workshops with them specifically, to decide on the new things that they need to do in order to fulfill the new strategy and the old things they need to give up. Leaders have a fundamental role in that. The problem is they delegate it to the guys in BD and it never gets done. Okay. Me, I'm a fingerprint leader. I went and did this. I had workshops with everybody in the organization. Say, okay, here's our 24-month plan, by the way. We never had a five-year plan because five-year plans are stupid because the fourth year never shows up, right? And all you get is a hockey stick. So I'd have a 24-month plan and I would go around and have workshops with everybody, say, okay, let's talk about what you need to do specifically in granular terms, okay, to be absolutely congruent with the new strategy. Time-consuming, painful, absolutely, because you ended up reselling your strategy every time you went out in front of a new audience, right? But at the end of the day, when they got it, okay, the execution piece then followed. They behaved differently. They did different things. Another element was which I call cleanse the inside, right? You can't execute if you got a dirty inside. Now, what's a dirty inside? A dirty inside has a lot of crap in it. It's just stuff from the past, you know, that momentum managers from the past love to do. And unless you fire them or give them a lobotomy, they're going to keep doing that stuff, right? It's crap. So I had cut the crap initiatives, okay, where we had contests in the business to try and identify the dumbest crap that we actually do. And what do we have to do to get rid of it? And it was amazing. I mean, all I had to do was ask people, tell me the stupidest thing we do, and I'd get 10 answers. Wow, that's amazing. And all we had to do was listen to them. So we had this cut the crap initiative, and I held managers accountable, et cetera, et cetera. Another thing that was really important to me personally was what I call leadership by serving around. In the old days, they used to call it management by wandering around, which was authored by Tom Peters, which is a great start. My experience was it didn't go far enough. This isn't about aimlessly wandering around. It's about serving around in the workplace. What can I do to help? Okay, what's going on with you in terms of executing the strategy? This is all associated with execution. This isn't about wandering around being cool in the workplace. It's trying to figure out what are the pinch points that people are experiencing that prevent them from executing. So I call that leadership by serving around. And I was just out there all the time saying, how can I help? How can I help? I take the stuff because, I mean, once you ask and people tell you, Roy, here's how you can help. If you don't deliver, you are totally screwed, right? So this was a huge piece for me. So I did that a lot of times. Premium pricing. Okay, you talk about growth. Try and find ways to premium price in a market that generally people, don't look at it that way. Led me to this whole concept that we're, from a marketing point of view, we're looking at things wrong. We're looking at trying to satisfy customer needs. The reality is most people's needs are satisfied now, okay? And if you want to play in that space, you end up basically being in the product, what I call a product flogging game, where all the products are essentially the same. Features and benefits are pretty well the same. So it relegates down to competing on price. Okay, so the natural evolution of a product world is to compete on price, commoditization, which means you can't grow revenues when you're in that space. Okay, unless you got economies of scale and scope, which few of our listeners and viewers have. Okay, so let's get real. That's another blue ocean strategy, right? Okay, so what I thought of is, look at, why are we screwing around with needs? I mean, why do we try and figure out how to give people what they covet? What they desire, what they crave. And so I came up with this notion of we need to be in the craving satisfaction business, because that piece has got relatively little competition and it's price insensitive. I mean, when you deliver Roy, right, a bottle of cab along with something, I immediately forget about anything except the cab, right? And so I know it sounds silly, but being able to sort of move to that, what do they desire space as opposed to what they need space, that's a huge metamorphosis of thought, and opens up incredible opportunities. So we tried to do that a lot. And to say that it was successful would be probably not truthful, because I didn't have long enough. I mean, this is, again, we're talking about culture, but the essence of trying to define that sort of cravings niche in the who, which are the customers you want to serve, that was extremely powerful, because it not only allowed you to grow revenues, it allowed you to protect yourself. Because as soon as you start, you know, satisfying cravings, people go, wow, that's incredible. I'm never going to leave Roy. I'm going to stay with him. He gets me, you know? So, yeah, so those were a few things. I got about 10. We don't have enough time. We could probably pick them up on right. The blue bill notes.
I could stay here forever and do that. Because I think, you mentioned the cab, but not everybody has the vineyard ability to be able to produce a cab, right? It's like we buy the lot, we get this dirt, it's awesome and fantastic, and the sun and the rain just don't comply with us, and we're not delivering cabs out. How does somebody that lives on a Merlot land start competing for cab? Because cab, and I think it's a really good analogy, because cab just by nature has a good reputation. I have tasted more cab that I would rather toss than finish, but it's still got the title to it.
Well, I guess what I was referring to is, yeah, if you knew that Roy craved a Cabernet, and if you knew
Cabernet,
if you knew that was, you know, what kind it was, and mm-hmm. you happened to be in the washing machine business,
yeah,
that's not a bad piece of information to have.
That's a very differentiate you
and surprise Roy with what you do for him.
Right.
And so if I spent, you know, $1,500 with you on a washing machine, I'm using as an example, and I was in the cravings business, what I would probably do is I would package cravings in there, all right, and the price would go up. Right. It wouldn't be a la carte pricing. And the reason that you would be okay with that is you would be looking at the cab, mm-hmm. because you coveted the cab.
Right.
And it's such an easy concept. Nobody does it. Yeah. I mean, they try to bundle things. Okay. The problem with bundling is it's based on the price discounting kind of methodology, right? The more you buy, the less you pay. What? That says you're not in the value business at all. You're in the price discounting business. It's insane. You can't scale a business when you bundle, because all that does, customers love it. The margins don't. I mean, it puts a straitjacket on your margins, okay? That's what bundling does. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm trying to build value, package value, and charge more. And cravings is a notion that if people thought about it for a while, it's not an obvious way to go. And you don't want to be silly doing it, right? But you mm-hmm. got to be thoughtful. But the notion of trying to figure out what Roy covets, what he desires, right? Mm-hmm. What his innermost secret is that he wants to satisfy, from a marketing point of view, oh yeah, that's got a ton of upside.
Nice. I love it. Well, and there is, I think, a whole mindset shift that has to happen through management, because it's not just, oh, and we'll send them a gift basket. That, again, not what you're talking about. It's very important to make that distinction. Yeah. It's not what we're talking about.
Yeah, it's not trash and trinkets, right? Like a lot of people say, well, yeah, we'll just send them a keychain. Whoop. Yeah, okay. You want to get the keychain back?
Exactly.
Be careful.
Exactly. I love it. So what would you say is your favorite part of your business?
My what?
Your favorite part of your business.
Oh, my favorite part of it, talking to people like you. Okay. Because I keep saying, you know, what I'm trying to do is change the conversation out there. I really am. I'm trying to create my own little sort of force into this whole notion of creating discontinuity from a momentum that has got literally centuries of energy and force behind it in business, you know, from an academic point of view. I mean, and you know, consultants, you know, promulgate academia, et cetera. And all that does is just make the force of the past even stronger. So by talking about the things that actually worked for me to build a business into $1 billion a year, I'm hoping to capture people's imagination to go, huh, I think I could do that. That sounds kind of weird, but you know, I mean, if it worked, And I always say, well, okay, it may not sound academically pristine, but I did use it in my journey to a billion. So there must be something to it. So I can always fall back on that as a proof point, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm just trying to change the conversation and also get a little more energy into this whole breakaway, be different sort of a force. And if I can do that one by one, then I'll be happy. Having these sorts of conversations, I find exhilarating. It's not like doing a PowerPoint presentation. Who cares? I mean, I do better when I'm having a conversation because you get me going. You light me up. And when I'm lit, I do a better job.
I love it. So is there any business that you have looked at and you're like, no, you're beyond hope. We can't work with you. Or is it like, hey, bring me your candy and let's see what you got.
You know, that's a really good, I've never been asked that question. It's a really good one though, because I happen to believe that every business, whether it's a for-profit or not-for-profit, has the potential to be who they want to be. All they need is a mentor, right? From, and this is self-serving, a mentor from somebody who's actually done some shit. Right. Okay. They need to be encouraged, you see, because they've been taught to comply. Compliance is listening to textbook academic, kind of like traditional. Let's look at the sales funnel. Let's do cold calling and all that kind of stuff, because they've been taught that that's the right way to do things. They need to be convinced that there are other ways. And I find that it's a matter of kind of knocking them down one by one, attracting people with interest about through conversations like this, and then having a discussion about where that could lead. But fundamentally, leaders and organizations want to do the right thing. They just need some help getting there. That's all. In a simple, uncomplicated, unintimidated way, they don't want to be browbeaten into the belief that they're not good. And the problem is today, the gap between some leaders and what the textbooks promulgate is huge. And that's unfortunate. That's what I would call academic abuse of leadership. Well, I'm out to get the hell rid of that, okay, and show people that, hey, there's easier stuff you can do to outdistance all those dudes. Let's have a conversation.
I love it. So give us an example of one of your Cinderella stories of one of your clients.
Well, I had this is a really good one. The company is called Mug Solutions. MUG stands for Manhole Underground. So this goes back a few years where this woman came to me, the CEO of the startup came to me and says, I got an idea and I need some help. Well, right away, okay, I'm with you, no question about it. So I said, tell me about the idea. Well, she was married to an outside plant dude who worked for BCTEL at the time, who was constantly out in the field, going down into manholes, right? Inspecting conduit and that sort of thing to make sure that everything was right. And he was stationed in the East End of Vancouver. And the problem that he had was the manholes were contaminated with used syringes. So he would go down into a manhole and unfortunately, he would step on them. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, yeah. Owie. He was fine. He was treated, but this happened many, many times. And so she had this idea.
It starts to hurt after a while. Yeah.
How many when you stop it, it feels good. Right. So she had this idea of creating this device that would fit over a manhole. The manhole's got two covers in it. There are two holes in it, right? One for oxygen, the other one for, I don't know what it is. Anyway, she created this device to cover the manhole. The manhole cover holes. Yep. Okay. And it would be fixed from the underside. So you couldn't, other than just a test for oxygen, you couldn't get syringes down. So that's what that was her device. Thanks. And she wanted some help about, she thought it was a great idea. And she was mesmerized by the number of manholes there were in the world. Right. So right away, she's all over this. It's going to be big. And so I helped her create a plan. We developed an only state inverter that clearly set herself apart. Her name is Tina Thompson, absolutely wonderful. She's still in the business, and convinced her that she had to earn the right to grow by being successful in Vancouver first. The geography will come, but kill them in Vancouver. Let's make this thing successful. we got a telco here that will listen to you guaranteed, because I know what the outside plant budget was because I ran it, right? So we got them going. And anyway, she's built this business. I don't know what she's doing with it now in terms of size. I've lost contact, but she's won safety awards. I mean, compensation was extremely interested in this. And yeah, she just loved it. It was simple. She executed it, and it's a wonderful story for her.
Oh, that's awesome. What a great story. And unless you're in that industry, something that you'd be I'm completely oblivious about. That is awesome.
Well, exactly.
I know our listeners are going to want more from you. How do they start the journey with you?
So I've got a website, bedifferentorbedead.com. And I've tried to make it a pretty robust set of resources for people. I blog every week. So I've got a blog, and I've been blogging since 2009 when I wrote my first book. Like, this stuff is not quote new. Okay. And that's one of the things that bothers me. I've been hammering away at this. Goes to show you how strong the inertia is, okay, in the environment. So I've been blogging on Be Different or Be Dead concepts, the cut the crap stuff that you and I talked about today, since 09. Go check it out. Okay, to learn more about what I do, and tell me if you don't agree. That's fine. That's good. There's a page in there. I've written 7 books around the subject. So there's a page on books, and you'll see my email there. My email is roy.osing@gmail.com. And I'm really happy to connect one-on-one. I have people sending me emails and I'll say, Roy, I've created my only statement. Take a look at this draft and tell me what you think. Or I've got this idea and blah, blah, blah. I've got this career problem. Oh, it's wonderful. And so nice. I'm engaging. Hopefully we're making a difference. But at the end of the day, if it's fun, it's worth doing. And it's got such an amazing upside. If it weren't for the fact that I actually saw the results of this. And by the way, I got goosebumps right now. If I hadn't seen it, it wouldn't have been something I would have been able to talk about, but I saw it. I saw the lights and the fire in their eyes as we marched to a billion. And that's what keeps me going.
I love it. So I get to ask you, at what point in life did you know that you were special kind of crazy enough to think that you could become an entrepreneur?
I never thought about it that way, to be honest. I just looked at the way things were being done, decided that there were other ways to do it, and decided to break away. I was the guy that introduced discontinuity into tradition. I was a guy that said yesterday's relevance is today's irrelevance, and we better do something about it. I didn't think about it in terms of the label. I just thought
But in terms of breaking apart from the rest of them, because I got to call it something. And there's a certain little je ne sais quoi that happens, and whether it's born or hatched or whatever.
Yeah, I don't know. I think I got it from my mother, to be honest. She was a strong lady, really strong. And my whole life has been kind of one of these guys that said, oh yeah, I don't buy that. I'm going to try something. I'm the contrarian. If you say yes, I'm probably going to say, well, maybe no. And we'll find out where the real answer lies. So maybe that's just part of Roy's DNA. And maybe there's a bit of Norwegian stuff going on there too. I don't know, but it was pretty young. I mean, I remember an early report card that I got saying Roy can be quite arrogant at times. And I didn't know what the word arrogant meant. Right. My mother told me what it meant. And she said, as she's the only person that could ever give Roy 2 syllables, because he would say, Roy, don't you ever come home with that kind of report card remark again. And I said, okay, I won't. And I never did. She frightened me.
That's awesome. I love it. You have been absolutely awesome. Any last words for our peeps?
No, just be different. Come on, tomorrow. What I want you to do is decide to do one thing differently. Just one thing, and learn from that. And the next day, do another thing. And sooner or later, the momentum will pick up and you will be different. You will become audacious. You will become bold. You will be living outside the lines, not inside the lines. You will not be in the herd. And we need more of you outside of the herd. Believe me, please do that.
Love it. Thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it. And I know how valuable it is.
You're very welcome, Michelle. I appreciate it.
Peeps, this is Michelle Nedelec. Thank you for being here with us today. Be sure to subscribe to the show on your favorite app and share it with your friends. We love helping entrepreneurs grow. Thank you for listening to 7 to 8. If you're interested in upping your speaking game, be sure to connect with our guests with the links in the show notes and connect with me to see how we can help you get your tech done for you and help your speaking dreams come true.